What's up, Darren?
Oh, we're live?
We're
Okay.
live.
We're live. All right.
What are
Happy
we?
National Ice Cream Day, everybody.
It is national. You cannot make this up.
Can't make
It
it up.
is National Ice Cream Day, and that is the day Joe Biden dropped out. I'm excited about this. I want to talk about it. You want to talk about it?
Indeed.
Let's go. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Colorado Show. I was detained this week fighting in federal court. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So I missed a lot of the news, and it was apparently a pretty big news week. We have a whole bunch of that stuff to talk about. We haven't talked about the assassination attempt yet. We haven't talked about JD Vance. We haven't talked about the RNCC. And so we're going to talk about all of that. But right before the show, earlier today, Joe Biden dropped out.
Yes,
What's up,
yes,
Darren?
yes.
It's
He's
good.
done his patriotic duty.
Yeah. Oh, his final act of service to his nation, right?
Yes,
We have
he's
a,
preserving democracy.
yeah,
Democinism.
democinism. It's straight up democinism. We have a very special guest, huge
Yes.
friend of the show, CFP contributor, Miss Karen Kennedy. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Greetings,
Hi,
everybody.
greetings. How's it going?
Afternoon. All right. How are you guys?
I mean, considering we just got this interesting news before the show today, I don't you could have timed this better.
Right.
You know,
Very
but
interesting. Yes, fact.
yeah,
And
Joe went to go get ice cream.
it's looking like Kamala. I wonder if he knows yet. I
Oh,
wonder if they told him he's dropping out yet.
Dr. Jill hasn't broken the news to him yet.
She's on her way to the Olympics, so yeah.
Oh yeah, you know what? Okay, well yeah, he probably doesn't even know.
Yeah, I bet he doesn't know.
He'll have a babysitter. She's finally going to put him in Shady Pines.
Yep.
Visiting, hold on. Visiting angels, America's choice in hockey.
Thank you for being a friend. All right, we have some reactions. Your heart is true. All right, we got reactions. It's reaction time from at Simon Atiba on X. We've got the Van Jones reaction. You guys excited?
Got old
Yes.
biscuit headed Van Jones. All right, let's
Here
go.
we go.
Yeah, there's a lot of political stuff. The Democratic Party is a family. At the end of the day, it's a family matter. You know, Joe
Manson
Biden's
family.
body may not be as strong as it used to be. His language skills may not be as sharp as they used to be. His heart is as big as ever. His heart is as big and as true and as strong.
Karen, don't cry. It's
And
okay.
this is the
I got a
difference
tissue.
between a politician and a leader.
Oh, he's fighting it. He's fighting the tears.
He made a selfless decision, and people are heartbroken. Even people who are pushing for this to happen, it's kind of like when your grandpa, you gotta take the keys, and everybody, you gotta take his keys, you gotta take his keys, you gotta, and he's fighting and he's fighting, and everybody's so frustrated, and then you finally get the keys back, and then you just cry, because this is somebody you should love, this is somebody you should care about, this is somebody who was there for you, this is somebody you wouldn't be here without him, and you have to take something from him.
Oh, it's
Now,
coming.
this is not, look, this politics is politics, but this
Oh,
is a human
he's
moment
gonna cry.
for one of the great humans in America. This is a
Oh, Jesus'
huge
voice.
No,
moment for him, for
Lord.
his family, for all of us who love him, for all of us who wanted him to get across the finish line. But if you're a young person watching this is leadership. This is patriotism.
Quitting
This
is
is what
leaving.
it means to put the country first and put the party first and put the cause first. When your arm gets tired, you let somebody else finish pitching the game.
Oh.
That's what Joe Biden has
Okay,
done.
so
He's done that for all of us. And so I just want to say, I don't know who's going to be the VP, the non-VP. I don't know anything about politics. I just know that I love this man.
At least he's admitting it. Man,
it was painful every day to sit up here and talk about him like he's just a, you know, some problem for the party. Wait till we get to the convention. You're going to see people crying, standing, screaming, cheering. He may not get a chance to talk for 10 minutes. We finally get a chance to talk for 10 minutes. He did the right thing for this country. He did the right thing for this party. All of us are going to be in this situation someday. And I hope that we take a moment to honor this man and to love this man. I love Joe Biden.
He's crying.
I appreciate what he's done.
Obligatory Van Jones crying segment.
Even if it's the right thing, it's still just horrible.
Yo, look, I'm going to just be honest with you. I can't stand the fact that all these individuals that they have from the Black community talking about politics for Democrats, they always like soy. It's so soy filled. It's like,
yeah.
It's like softy session all the time. Van Jones is, he's in the wrong field. He needs to be in Hollywood somewhere. If he can cry on command like that,
right?
He could do some Denzel numbers.
It's contrived. When he was in the Obama administration, after coming out of Standing Together, organizing a revolutionary movement, STORM, which is where he came out of into the Obama administration, he was a proud, out and proud Marxist. They rehabbed him pretty hard during the Obama administration. And now he cries on TV for a living when Democrats get bad news. So, you know?
You can't be like I can't stand people like I'm for communism, I'm for Marxism, but you benefit off capitalism. Like, shut up.
Right.
These people sound stupid. Like,
so we do have another important reaction. Earlier today, Kamala Harris got the news.
Hold on. We got it. Poor
hubby.
Jesus. 4 more years of this, guys.
He knows how to sell right there. Okay.
What is happening?
Yeah, exactly. So
she's still got a sense of humor. Right?
Duh. And I think in New Hampshire, you're
Oh my goodness. Oh, Brian. God help us.
There she is. All right, so
the best clips are the ones where she's the only one laughing in the room. Those are the best ones, because it's like, yo, like, what the heck are you laughing at?
Yeah, she's pretty happy about the news.
She's ecstatic. I'm sure she is. But they're gonna kick her to the curb at the convention.
Can't do it.
Yo, here's my watch. I'm telling you, this is my all right. Conspiracy theory moment.
Let's go.
All right, here we go. I believe that at the convention she will be contested.
Maybe, but I don't think she might be challenged, but I don't think she will I don't think anybody will prevail for two reasons. One, she is it's her job next. She's been the lady in waiting of this presidency. for a while, and she is sufficiently intersectional for the Democrat Party, and replacing her with, say, a white woman or a white man would be problematic for them. The second reason is the money. The PAC money, I believe, can only go to her because she's on the ticket. So all the PAC money that...
The problem is you got contributors that are willing to dish out more dough without this ticket. See what I'm saying?
Well, there was... Oh,
and I know her infinity. I know she has 3 infinity stones of wokeness. You know what I'm saying? But
at least.
But that ain't gonna save her. You know what I'm saying? She's gonna get curb stomped in this. She would get curb stomped if she stayed in. Like they got mm-hmm. they gotta like look at what the Democrats have to deal with. They gotta deal with the pro-Palestinians outside of the convention. They got to deal with each other inside the convention. They got to deal with all kinds of freaking
dissent
from black voters from Chicago. It's about to get real. Yeah, I hope y'all have y'all popcorn ready. It's about to get real. I need some. I'm gonna go back to Goobers for this. This is good. This is gonna be a good movie.
So I hear what you're saying, right? There's just endless buckets of Democrat money, but they have to convince those donors to throw in money behind a new ticket. They're not loving Kamala. They actually left a call with her, frustrated and annoyed.
Yeah.
Whoopsie.
Yeah.
Which is what all of us feel after Kamala hits our screens.
Well, yeah, make some noise for Kamala, whatever the heck her name is this week, everybody.
How's it coming? Let's read a little bit of this. A call Friday featuring Vice President Kamala Harris and about 300 major Democrat donors left many who dialed in frustrated, with one donor declaring it ludicrous shortly before it ended, according to two sources familiar with the call. One person on the call referred to it as mismanaged and rushed. They added expectations had not been managed well, and some participants left feeling admonished. That person and two other sources said many donors joined hoping to get an insider's view of how to move forward in the wake of President Joe Biden's dismal debate performance and the growing number of Democrats calling for him to drop out of the race. Instead, they said donors left the call feeling disappointed, like they had not gained any new insights or helpful information. Quote, "It was a total failure," said one source who was on the call and who spoke on the condition of anonymity to provide a candid assessment. Quote, "It was damaging. It was poor planning." What do you guys think about Kamala's, President Harris? Set aside, you know, your loyalties to President Trump. Is she a viable candidate?
Not on this side of the planet.
Nope.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, and if you can't figure out if Kamala is Indian or whatever else she is, then you ain't black.
Those are the rules.
But here's the funny thing. Here's the crazy thing, though. The black bourgeoisie are gonna get behind it, right? And the reason is, like, you got people like Roland Martin. You got, well, first of all, she's Greek, right? So she's part of the Divine Nine. So she's in the sorority. So you're gonna have all the black fraternities and sororities people backing her for the most part.
For the most part.
She went to a HBCU, so that's her coalition right there. And then, but here's the crazy thing. If she gets contested at the convention, there was one lady who was on, I wish I could find this clip. It was one lady who was on Stephen A. Smith's show that said flat out, black women will tear the Democrat Party apart.
I remember that. I saw that. Yeah. they can't do it. They can't replace her. Change my mind. I will, I'll give you a dollar if I'm wrong, but they can't swap her out.
We've been seeing some very interesting activity this campaign season. It wouldn't surprise me if they did. You know what I mean?
If they swapped her out, yeah.
If they swapped out, yeah. Anything's possible at this point.
They
come on,
are desperate. This is the desperate X move. This is the when he won't return your text, he cuts you off social media, he blocks you on everything, he leaves you on red. I'm pregnant. And then you have to answer.
Joe Biden goes to the country.
This is where they're at. They'll try. They can't. They know they can't. There's campaign finance violations all over this. Maybe he agreed to just take part of the $200 million coffers and just split it. I want $100 million. And you can have $100 million for Kamala, so you can't say that I didn't give any of the money to her, but I need my cut before you go. Hunter has hookers and blow, and he's got to pay London, and she's very expensive, so I can't go out broke.
But don't you think it's wild that he bowed out the day before homegirl for the FBI is going in front of
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another from interesting State angle. Secret Service. I mean, yep, yeah, she's mm-hmm. they're gonna put her in the pressure cooker tomorrow.
Oh,
I just want to say, it is so unfair that Steve Bannon is missing all of this.
Oh my god.
Yeah. No. He's in cell block C, cracking yeah. up right now.
Yeah. Not cool, man. All right. So the Trump campaign.
Oh, hold on. Somebody hooked us up with a link.
All right, you preview that, and I'm going to play the Trump campaign wasting no time before hitting it, Kamala.
Kamala was in on it. She covered up Joe's obvious mental decline.
Our president is in good shape, in good health, tireless, vibrant, and I have no doubt about the strength of the work that we have done.
But Kamala knew Joe couldn't do the job, so she did it. Look what she got done. A border invasion, runaway inflation, the American dream dead. They created this mess. They, no, Kamala owns this failed record. Make America Great Again, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Boom.
Wow. I love it. Straight to the point.
Mm-hmm.
Dead ass. You want 4 more years of this? That should be it. You want 4 more years of this shit? Uh-oh. Nah. Can I say shit?
Yeah, you can say
whatever
you want.
Hey, call sign Cujo hooked us up with the Stephen A. Smith clip. But Yeah, but here's the thing. He sent me the one that's like 30 minutes long. I need the part where she snaps on Stephen A. I need that part. So tell me what second. Yeah, tell me what second that is. You know what? It might be even on his page.
Let's see. Hold for processing.
Oh, call sign said he said copy. I'm on it. Yeah. Give me exactly where to start that bad boy at, bro.
I think I got it.
You got it? Okay.
Call sign.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. All right.
Yeah. Oh, let's see. Hey, I want to give a shout out to everybody in the chat right now. Chris Cross, American Nurse, David's Dog Spa. Let's see who else is in the building. Susie Q20.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Here we go.
First of all, Stephen, who are we agreeing? There's a long list of Democrats. Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer. The list goes on and on and on. You've named 4 or 5 people. Where is their consensus? You've got to build consensus. And there is not consensus right now. If you pick a white man over Kamala Harris, Black women, I can tell you this, we're going to walk away. We're going to blow the party up. If you pick the...
Me too. You're going to walk away. You ain't going to walk away to Trump.
Everybody over Kamala Harris. So where are we getting agreement from on who this ideal Democratic candidate should be? Tell me that. Nobody's told me who it should be. And then tell me how you're going to get the 4,000 delegates, which I am one of them. I'm a delegate coming from California. So who's going to step out? One, tell Joe Biden you got to step aside. Because everybody's not being mature about this process. Joe Biden is not just the president. There's a whole team of people. There's an administration. So if
That's a giveaway.
My prediction is that he brings with him Kamala Harris, the most diverse administration in the history of this country. Y'all need to just stay the course. We got more Black judges appointed under Joe Biden than anyone, even President Barack Obama.
That is not the point because we're not, point. Once again, hold on, Ariba. We are not.
But I know you don't give up on your star player in the middle of a game.
Okay, excuse me. Time out. Let me explain to you. I can give you a host of examples of when teams have given up on a star player that has gotten a bit too old and beyond his prime. It happens in sports all the time.
Yeah, not you don't just know sports,
coaches,
like.
But also with not just with players, but also with coaches and also with executives. That's absolutely not true.
Can you tell me why every Democratic primary that has taken place between the time Democratic primary started this year until today, Joe Biden has won those primaries. If all of these Democrats wanted someone other than Joe Biden to be the candidate on the ballot in 2024, they had an opportunity before June of 2024 to make that a reality. And I don't know about all those sports figures that's been changed in games. I'm going to take your word for that. But I bet you they weren't almost at the finish line when you decided, let's change them out. We are almost at the finish line. We have an opportunity to save this democracy.
Ariba.
And
save democracy.
You blow up Joe Biden, you might as well give Donald Trump the keys to the White House and let him start ruling the country in August.
Boom.
Thank you, LaQuita.
That was the first smart thing she said. Give her a hand, everybody. Crazy. They're down bad right now.
Do the Democrats have time to build a consensus around another candidate? And is the division that's happening, I think we believe Democrats generally rally around and all march in the same direction like good little comrades, but they're kind of pissed right now. And replacing Kamala Harris with like a Gavin Newsom, that's not a good look.
Let me tell you something. You got Californians that will come out here and tell the rest of the world not to vote for Gavin.
Absolutely.
Because he's a wash. He's
devastating.
Like, absolutely. Gretchen Whitmer as well. Another failed governor that somehow, I mean, Gavin Newsom, my God, they had a recall against him. They won. Uh-huh. They got the signatures, they verified the signatures, and he stayed.
Yep.
He's only there. He's not popular. Gretchen Whitmer, the psycho Mary Kay lady, nobody likes her either. She kept Michigan locked down for 2 years.
Okay.
Nobody likes her.
Gretchen Whitmer banned people from buying seeds during lockdown. You were not allowed to buy seeds and play in your garden when you were locked down. You weren't allowed to do it because of Gretchen Whitmer. She wrapped those seed towers in cellophane. I don't know, she didn't personally do it, but she ordered that you couldn't buy non-essential things at Walmart or at the store. We can't let them forget these things. Gretchen Whitmer was a tyrant when she had lockdown powers. Do not give her the power of the presidency.
I did not know that she did that. That is crazy.
She banned seeds, Darren.
That's crazy.
Like cucumber seeds, lettuce seeds, tomatoes.
Nope. Like for what? Like why? Like why? What was her reasoning behind that?
Get the coof.
Communism.
Democunism.
Democunism.
Democunism. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Gotcha.
And then she let her husband go boating, as American Nurse says. They did a big old party for her daughter's graduation at the beach house or the lake house. Absolute despotism on display in Michigan under that woman when she had emergency powers. Do not give her the power of the presidency.
Oh, let me tell you something. You're gonna see there's certain individuals that can probably kind of keep things at bay, right? But you put a Gavin Newsom or a Gretchen Whitmer in the White House, and I'm telling you, you're going to see a civil dispute.
Yeah,
let's just say
that's nice.
We have another special guest that has joined us. Before I bring him in, we are going to recognize our incredible sponsors on the show. So we will be right back, and then
hold on, here we go.
Okay, I'm holding. We'll be right back.
Contagion Kit is something new. Can you tell us about that and what's in it and what it's for?
Well, the Contagion Kit is specifically geared towards a respiratory virus. It mm-hmm. includes some of the medications that we've been talking about that are well known to be able to treat respiratory viruses. And mm-hmm. importantly, it includes a nebulizer, a way to aerosolize a liquid medication so that you can breathe it into the lungs. Mm-hmm. Again, these kits are not meant to replace your doctor or a relationship with a doctor. They are not meant for you to fly solo. We have telemedicine visits mm-hmm. available if you have any questions about the symptoms you're having. There is a booklet in there as well that supports and kind of coaches you through what symptoms you may be having from something. So these aren't meant to be a panacea to replace mm-hmm. everything in medicine. It's a way, however, for people to feel and to be prepared to be at the ready, to be more resilient, and to be more immune from the sorts of intrusions that we saw during COVID, where your insurance company or your own doctor or the pharmacist or the pharmacy was refusing to let people get a hold of medication.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
If we have a financial crisis, one of the things you're going to want to be able to do is to barter and to buy goods and services, obviously. And if you're out of dollars or the ATM's down or you're locked down or you need a way to pay for something and maybe the current financial system just doesn't exist, check out these prepper bars. They break into little pieces, different grams of silver or gold, and you can carry them in your wallet, break a piece off to pay for whatever you need at the time. It's a fantastic idea. They're sold at cdmbar.com. Check it out and get some prepper bars and be ready. Thanks.
That is very cool. I want some prepper bars.
Yeah. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. So I was in court this past week and I had a couple of co-defendants with me. Holly Kaysen, who was another co-founder of USCIP, and retired U.S. Air Force Colonel Sean Smith, who was here and then just dropped out. I'm sure he'll be right back in just a second. I was just introducing him and he just went away. There he is. So joining us now is Colonel Sean Smith. What's up? What's up, Sean?
Howdy.
Welcome to the show.
All right. So before we're going to talk about the case for the second half of the show, but before we get into that, Sean, did you hear the news that Joe Biden dropped out and endorsed Kamala Harris? And how excited are you about this?
He's already laughing. Yeah.
Did you see Van Jones cry about it?
No, but I mean, one thing is certain is that if we all work together, together we can work to work to see what can be unburdened by all that shit that just got pulled over the last 7 years, including an attempted assassination attempt and, you know, the destruction of our southern border and our economy.
Yeah, she was the border czar. I do think if we all work together, we can make Van Jones cry, though. There is precedent for that.
That doesn't take much. Just show the trailer for Bambi. Van Jones, Van Jones will cry at a football game. Like, dude, is the best.
I think it's harder on smart people, and he's not dumb, so it's not like he can just go along with it and not see what's happening, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Interesting.
They're losing their white knuckle grip on power. I think it's really interesting because in that Van Jones clip. And let me, I want to talk about it. So give me a second, cause we're going to play it again. We won't play the whole thing, but I want you to see this, Sean, cause there's something in here that I think is very, important.
Yo, Costan Cujo is hilarious. You got to see this.
All right, hold up. Let's see.
The buildup.
Oh dear. I don't know if we, can I put that up? Yeah, why not? We'll just do it for a minute. All right, that's enough of that. All right, so this is Van Jones's reaction to the news.
The Democratic Party is a family. At the end of the day, this is a family matter. You know, Joe Biden's body may not be as strong as it used to be. His language skills may not be as sharp as it used to be. His heart is as big as ever. His heart is as big and as true and as strong. And this is the difference between a politician and a leader.
Oh, shut up!
He made a selfless decision, and people are heartbroken. Oh. Even people who are pushing for this to happen, it's kind of like when your grandpa, you got to take the keys, And everybody, you got to take his keys. You got to take his keys. You got to, and he's fighting and he's fighting. And everybody's so frustrated. And then you finally get the keys back. And then you just cry.
Okay. So taking his keys, how is he still has the nuclear codes, we're meant to believe, right? Taking, telling him to drop out of the race is not taking his keys. He's still
here.
Supposedly running the country.
Allegedly.
Grandpa.
I remember my grandmother had moved from Chicago. This is my dad's mom, had moved from Chicago to California. And I was riding in the car with her, and she had turned the wrong way down a one-way street and was like accelerating like it was a highway. This was in the Bay Area in California. And I can remember looking around like wide-eyed and saying to her, "Grandma, it's a one-way street." And she said, and this is an exact quote I'll never forget, "I haven't hit anything, have I?"
Okay.
And she still drove. And I totally get what Van Jones is saying, because later on when she was in an assisted living place, she couldn't drive anymore. And there were family members wanting to get rid of her car. And I wouldn't let them, because that car for her was, you know, her freedom, her autonomy, that she was never going to drive again. We all knew it. I just wouldn't let them get rid of it. But I get what Van Jones is saying, but it's the most inept imaginable analogy, right? Because if he's not allowed, what they're really talking about is him getting a new car. You can't get a new car, Grandpa, because you can't drive. He's still driving. We're all in it,
right?
We're in the back of that car that he's like trying to see if it'll go off the cliff.
It's a great point. It's not that they've taken his keys; they're just not letting him buy a new car.
Pretty exactly.
Oh, wow! Good
heavy.
Analogy.
That was heavy.
That right?
was heavy. You know what? You know what? You get one of these.
He's on fire.
That was good.
Absolutely.
I thought you were gonna do a bangarang. Hook. Here's a hook. Okay. So Sean and I were in court last week. We were sued by the NAACP, League of Women Voters, and Mi Familia Vota for voter suppression, voter intimidations, coercion, and threats under the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and the KKK Act of 1871. Rather, the case was filed. It was full of falsehoods. There was no factual support for anything that they said about us, but they filed their case and then they immediately gave it to the press. Our character was assassinated damn near instantly, because when the, you know, most well-respected civil rights organizations in the world say things about you to the AP and the Washington Press, they are reported as though they're true. We finally had our day in court this past week. And Sean, I've told this story so many times since Thursday. I'm going to let you kind of give your summary of what happened last week.
Well, so we're up on the gallows, right? This is the conclusion, the culminating event in a 2-year long public lawfare lynching, in which these organizations have, and Ash is so charitable, she keeps calling them the most well-respected. They're at least the most well-known. I don't think they deserve at this point any respect, because now we know what they are. I didn't know before. You know, I knew people who won awards, and I know like President Trump's still proud of getting the, you know, NAACP award. I think he was with Muhammad Ali and Rosa Parks when he did it. But this was a lawfare lynching, and they got away with it with other people, and they got away with it with us until they had to show the evidence. So it's like we were standing up on the gallows, and then the woman who was supposed to say that we did it said, "Oh wait, no, that's not them." And then said, "Well, I don't even know if that was the right organization, you know, that was in her sworn statement." So it was pretty amazing. You know, it was a pretty amazing moment, a series of them, I guess, to hear these people on the stands. And it was, there were a lot of, I would say, unforced errors on their part. Like it's rare that they admit the truth, but they got up there on the stand and their witnesses, I guess, just felt so great about everything that they admitted a bunch of things. They admitted a bunch of things that are really very bad for them and bad for their assertions. And I think bad for them going forward, you know, with following legal actions. I'll talk about one because it's not directly related to our case. Chris Beal, the deputy secretary of of the Colorado Secretary of State, who's an attorney himself, literally sat up on the witness stand and admitted that they, meaning Colorado Secretary of State, require Colorado Secretary of State employees in the Elections Division to be registered voters. And that if they aren't registered voters, that he, you know, calls them in for a meeting and has a discussion.
We'll have a conversation about it. Yeah.
Yeah. He literally admitted to a violation of federal law on the stand. You can't do that. You can't even ask, let alone look. And the fact that he has complete and total access to Colorado's voter registration records, if he's looking at their record, not only can he see whether or not they're registered, which would be the basis of him calling them in for the conversation, but he can see how they're registered, which, given his conduct and Secretary of State Griswold's conduct, you know, it seems pretty obvious that it would be susceptible or ripe for coercion. So he literally admitted to committing felonies up on the stand. And he has no idea, really. He thought it went great. That's how well things have been going for them, you know, unchallenged. So
it was, yeah. And I don't know if you saw, Sean, if you saw Jenna Griswold's impeachment hearing earlier this year. Did you happen to see that?
No, I missed most. I heard about it. I heard that, I could have given them, I literally have a list of, I think I'm up to 15 now, election law violations by Jenna Griswold, completely different, distinct. I don't mean 15 instances. There's at least probably 12 or 1300 instances, but 15 different laws or statutes that she's violated, including federal and state. And I've got some of those I've submitted to the Attorney General of Colorado and to DAs, and some I haven't submitted yet. And so I could have given them all of that, but nobody asked. So
yeah,
I don't think the minority was particularly interested in, you know, winning that.
Yeah. No, it was a stunt. But during the stunt, they had a former employee of the Secretary of State's office who was not political staff. It was, you know, more kind of the regular bureaucracy that runs the State Department. And this employee was testifying to how political and toxic the environment had become inside of the Secretary of State's office. And I think that, you know, there's now additional confirmation of that. If you have a moral opposition to voting, you are not allowed to work. That's discrimination. You're not allowed to work at the State Department. And if you stand on that right, you're going to have a conversation with your employer, who is the second most powerful State Department employee in the state. That's incredible. It's incredible.
You know, what's interesting is, you know what, our judge in our case, Judge Charlotte Sweeney, you know what her specialty in practice was, in private practice before she...
Civil rights?
Labor law.
What was it? Labor law?
Labor law. So the moment he said it on the stand, she would have known, right? I mean, I'm not a labor law attorney or any kind of attorney. And when he said it, I thought, did that dumb son of a bitch just admit that he committed felony violations of federal labor law on the stand? He also, by the way, spoke my email address prefix, totally unnecessary, right? It was like when they outed you, Ash, when they outed your information in their hearing on the
Trump? Yes, in the Anderson versus Griswold trial, the district court trial.
That's right. Yeah, it was very interesting. So I suspect that Charlotte Sweeney would have known right away that he was admitting on the stand. You know, if that I was thinking of the movie A Few Good Men, where Nathan, what's his last name? Not pointing. Whatever the Marine Colonel
Jessup.
Jessup, that's right. Nathan Jessup admits on the stand that he ordered the code red, and then he immediately transitioned to a different type of hearing where the judge advocate reads him his rights. That's what I was thinking of. Like, I thought, he just admitted to violating federal law on the stand in front of a judge who specializes in labor law. Like, it provides support for Scott Adams' theory that this is all a simulation. It's like the world winking at you.
Yeah. Shout out to Holly at Altitude, who's in the chat. She is our third co-defendant in this case. And my guess is she didn't want to put on makeup, which is why she's not on here. I get it. I hate makeup.
Oh, and we just lost him.
He'll be back. He didn't want to wear makeup either. No. I'm sure. I'm sure he'll be back. There was all sorts of things. We learned a lot about the Colorado Open Records Act processes. The Deputy Secretary of State said under oath that the Cora buck stops with him. Anybody who's attempted to do Cora in the state of Colorado, particularly to Secretary of State's office, knows that it's very difficult to get those filled. It's a lot. In fact, Sean, you have one of what I think is the most egregious open records quotes for fee to get an open records request filled ever. Can you share that story?
Well, this particular one was a request to the Colorado Attorney General's office. And I'll have to go back into the record. We've sent so many requests. In fact, I sent, so there was in December of 21, I had sent an open records request to the Secretary of State's office. And I'd sent it specifically asking for Jenna Griswold's email. Because every time we did these requests, we never got any of her email. So I found her email address and then I sent her an email and then I requested the records for that period because I knew she'd got at least one. And I thought, well, if they don't give me any back, then I've got proof because I sent the thing and I've got all the header information back. And I ended up, so Beal was like in the office and instead of the Cora person. So he responded back and gave me a crazy quote for the email request, Cora request. And so I broke my request up into 52 separate requests that were each bound by a specific period, which under the Colorado statute are each a distinct and separate request. Like it lists criteria. And that's one of the criteria that would make them separate. But for his own convenience and for his own spite, I guess, he decided to combine them all and give me the combined quote again. And I said, no, you owe me an hour for each one of those because that's what's in the statute. And he just flat out refused. And so I referred it to the attorney general and nobody ever responded from the attorney general, which is what they do with every single referral I send to them, including the sworn affidavits that they're obligated by statute to investigate. So anyway,
and how much was the fee?
I had sent them a Cora request and they gave me first of all, they missed their statutory deadline, if I remember correctly. They're supposed to respond within a certain number of days and they can invoke an emergency extension if they, workload, et cetera. And so they just were late and they didn't even bother invoking a suspension. It's basically we're in charge and we'll do what we want. Never mind the law. Oh, what's our office again? Anyway, so they sent me back a quote. Now, keep in mind the budget for that year for the attorney general in Colorado, the whole budget for the year, all their, I think they've got, 70, 80 attorneys on staff, something like that. Plus they do all this prosecution, investigation, and they have to maintain records. Their entire budget for the year was $96 million that year. They sent me back an open records request quote. And I assume this was after my free first hour, but they didn't say. $4 million.
Yeah. Sunshine laws.
Yeah. And I think I forwarded that one to Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition, but they weren't interested in, they're interested in certain information being open to the public, but not other information. So they never reached back out to me about it, but seemed egregious.
So an open records request for communications and you knew that you would get at least one response because you sent the communication as a test, and rather than filling your open records request, they consolidated it and quoted you $4 million.
No, that was like two events. So the sec state's office gave me a quote for the email of I think it was $1,300 or $1,500 for that was like for a day's email. And then the attorney general, I was looking for something else. I'm trying to remember. I think it was their review of some specific orders. I tried to get to you. I was really disappointed by this, but sometimes the guard is very politicized. They've made a big deal. The Secretary of State's office had made a big deal in 2020 about how they were, securing our elections. They had the guard people on the job and they had the rescue, the RESCU. Rapid election securing cyber unit or some nonsense. Well, the guys
like Twitter file stuff, right? That's basically.
Well, yeah, I looked at the people who they had on the rescue team, and none of them were cyber people. One of them was Nate Blumenthal, who was a kind of a toady from back in CISA and back east. In fact, I don't know that he ever came out to Colorado other than maybe a meeting or two. He stayed out in DC, to my knowledge, but he was supposed to be like the nominal head of rescue. What they really were doing. This is the organization that was combing social media, looking for things to be offended about, and then communicating through Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, through their special liaisons that they had set up for government that were related to, like, the guy who was FBI and DOJ, who was doing the same thing with Twitter. So they were reporting people who, you know, violated the narrative by disagreeing with the Secretary of State or rightly pointing out that she was a gigantic criminal. So anyway, that's what the rescue unit did. They didn't have any ability to secure anything in cyber. I mean,
yeah, they were the cyber protection people for the Secretary of State's office, but what they were actually doing was Twitter files kind of censorship. Behavior on behalf. Yeah, censorship. I was during when Jenna Griswold went for her second round of emergency rules in July of 2021, I set up a Twitter account just to troll her, and I made it 2 weeks and I was taken down. So ever since the Twitter files came out, I have been saying, Elon Musk, you have to give us Colorado. You have to give us the Colorado Twitter files. Maybe we'll get there one day.
It was taken down.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Karen, I want to go to you because you were in the courtroom for, I think, pretty pivotal parts of this trial, and you were USCIP as well, Jefferson County captain. You engaged in canvassing like Sean and I both did. What was the trial experience like for you in the gallery?
Well, it seemed as though they wanted to be, Mi Familia, the NAACP, based on the witness that I saw that they called the League of Women Voters with the clueless witness that they had on the stand that I saw. It seemed as though they exhibited a certain level of confidence, but I think after the League of Women Voters testimony, they lost their steam, and then they thought that they had probably regained some points with the judge, with Professor Ellis from
Marquette.
Is it Marquette?
Case Western Reserve.
With his testimony. And
so just for the audience's sake, Professor Ellis was a academic attorney that they brought in as an expert on essentially the racial history of voter suppression throughout the American, throughout American history, with a particular focus on the Jim Crow era. Mm-hmm. And his testimony was an attempt to say that voter intimidation practices, he actually said, these are not the grand marches of the KKK. Voter intimidation has evolved to include voter vigilantism, which he attempted to paint us as voter vigilantes. So
comparison is that? Like, that's a reach. That is ridiculous.
Tried it, at which point I got up and stormed out of the courtroom.
I heard about that.
Could not do another word of this porch. This boule.
Yeah.
Boule. Yeah. Darren,
the black bourgeoisie.
This individual. I'm trying to figure out what a voter vigilante is at that point, and how I did read some documentation that indicated supposedly that we were primarily terrorizing people in black and brown neighborhoods, which I don't know, perhaps that may be another, maybe that was other committee captains.
It was just made up. It was just a fabrication. The idea that anybody was armed, that anybody was interrogating anybody, that anybody was representing themselves as a government official, that anybody was wearing official looking badges, that anybody was targeting any specific voter or group of voters. There was never any factual support for any of it. It was just made up. And Sean, do you want to maybe talk a little bit about what the canvassing was from, you know, to other side of that?
Yeah. So the, and just as Karen's talking, you know, what did I call it, Ash? Legal blackface, right?
Yep.
Because what these organizations did was purport that they're, you know, somehow defending or protecting, you know, minority Americans' voting rights. You know who is protecting minority Americans' voting rights? The hundreds of canvassers.
Yeah.
Right. These were American citizens that went out and took their time to professionally and courteously engage with their neighbors. Some of them traveled to other towns to help out canvassing teams, but mostly it was people in their own neighborhoods or their own towns going door to door, politely asking, you know, to verify the Secretary of State's own records. But the plaintiffs tried to represent it in every twisted, like they, in order to kind of show their case, they required time travel because they tried to say that my remarks in February of 22 scared people in the summer of 2021. That's some foresight, you know. They required mind reading, so they were trying to tell us what everybody was thinking while we were doing anything. It was sad, but
and
so
they
the actual
they had already decided to file a lawsuit against us before you ever even made those remarks.
Well, they decided to file a lawsuit against Mike Lindell, I think, and then found that we were associated, right? That's what League of Women Voters' internal email said, right? Their preparation was because they were planning on filing against Mike Lindell. That's why in the interrogatories, they asked all of us who were, named as defendants, well, how did Mike fund this? What did Mike have to do? When did you start talking? Like, and they were... At that point, when we did those depositions, they knew, based on what we were telling them and the records we had given them, they knew that we were never in Mesa, that they had the name of every person we canvassed. Yeah. And they literally, with that information, couldn't find out of what, 4,600 responses, they couldn't find anybody to say they were intimidated. I suspect they probably ran across a lot of, you know, Hispanic and Black Americans and Asian Americans, because whoever was at the house is who we canvassed, right? We were going by address, not names, really. But anyway, so the canvassing was, you start off with the Secretary of State's data. So we download, they have certain files. One is a master voting history file, and one is like a master voter registration file. So we downloaded the master voting history file, which includes the registration information, because we were trying to canvass people originally that the state said had voted. And then finally we were just canvassing both because we figured out belatedly that there were a lot of people who were telling us they voted, but the Secretary of State was saying that they didn't. So we ended up at the end, or for the last, I'd say month or so, canvassing both to collect that data about lost votes. But so we were taking that data, and then the data analytics people were breaking it up into county lists. And then they would look within that county for the precincts that had the highest and the lowest voter opportunity scores. And the voter opportunity score was just simply a ratio of how many times they had voted over how many times they'd had the opportunity to vote, because that was a voting related behavior that was an independent variable that we could use to describe and interpolate in between those two extremes of low and high. So the whole thing that the plaintiffs tried to assert that we targeted low VO score, that's totally false. We literally equally went to low and high VO score. So it was among the, I don't know, 50
Darren
or 60
has a question.
Lies. Oh yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So basically, you guys did what they were supposed to do and they got mad at you for it.
Bingo.
That's exactly right.
Because this is not really like a thing like they should be pissed about.
It's insane.
And you did their job for them, and they got pissed. That's ridiculous.
Because they refused.
Because they refused. And might I interject it for just a second? We did all this for no money. So they were trying to find money. And when I want to go back to something Sean said when he was talking about the communications that went out, that was from the League of Women Voters. Yes. So it's as though they were fishing to try to find something that we did. Did anybody show up with a gun? What about pull up to your crib in a ski mask? Did anybody you remember that? Did anybody intimidate you? So they got, you know what, maybe one or two responses. So like Ash said, they literally just made it all up.
Well, yeah, and according to the
he was asked who paid for your attorneys.
That's a damn
shame. I don't know.
I don't know
who's paying for all this litigation. So there was no evidence of anybody being armed whatsoever. There was nothing in the factual record, nothing proposed. But their communications, again, to the AP and then spread to all the news media everywhere, translated into other languages. There were international articles, all the things. We were deploying armed agents to interrogate minority voters. That's what we were accused of. And the character assassination was swift and complete. And filing those allegations cost them $402. $402 to destroy our names, forever attach us to the KKK, and they made it up.
So are you guys suing them?
Don't say that here.
No, go ahead. No, yeah, let's leave that. I know what I would do.
I told him up on the stage, chat. Right? When I was on the stage at the Rock Church in Castle Rock, I'm in favor of justice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Justice isn't done.
Correct.
Right? It has not been done.
No.
We're on the path to justice, but it has not been done. And I'm still in favor of it.
We live in a capitalistic society. Justice comes with a paycheck.
I do want to recognize the court though, because there was a lot of concern. You know, it's not a secret that the judge was a Democrat, donated to Act Blue. There were concerns
in her own words.
And there were, you know, I think for all of us, a little bit of angst. I can't go there in my head. I don't want to live in a world where all the judges are corrupt. It's beyond my comprehension. Leaned into it. My experience, that judge, she was straight-faced, she was stern, she was tough. She called balls and strikes without fear or favor. It was a fair court that we were in, and that gave me a lot of comfort for where we are in this, you know, with what we've seen with a lot of lawsuits and things, gave me a lot of comfort. Shout out to the court.
Yeah. I saw something that SKZX said, I gotta scroll up and find it. Said something about Denver Denver's like a stain on Colorado.
Well, yeah. Denver dragging Colorado down. I think that's what it was.
Yeah,
Denver, I saw that too.
Yeah. I was like, man.
So we are just about out of time. We'll do final thoughts from both of our guests. And thank you guys both so much for joining us today.
Yes. Give our guests a round of applause.
Karen, we'll go to you first.
Thank you for the invite. Always a pleasure. I don't know, maybe after what I witnessed last week, there is justice. There was partial remedy with the exoneration from the court. So thank God for that. But remedy has not been paid in full. And these guys have had a lot of sleepless nights. And just, you know, it proves that in some cases, justice does prevail. And, you know, perhaps that can be a inspiration for some of the other people or groups who were demonized and canceled and litigated by these same individuals who got away with it. Perhaps they'll wake up and realize maybe they need to continue to pursue justice. Yeah. And might I mention a name that we should all be familiar with, Nick Sandman. Anywho, that's me.
Thank you so much, Karen. Sean, your final thoughts.
Well, I didn't get a chance to tell Karen. I was so grateful, you know, that you guys came to listen. I mean, you know, so many people, I don't think they had any people come to listen to their side other than Chase Woodruff, who, you know, is on their team. So, but there were a lot of citizens and people who had canvassed came and listened. I was just, you know, they've been dragging our name through the mud for 2 years now. They did their best. They took their best shot. I mean, they did a lot of, you know, reputational damage, really disparaged us. But the people who canvassed, you know, I only canvassed a few times, but I got to see a lot of people who canvassed, and they're just the best people, right? Good hearts, doing it for their country, doing it because they believed in our Constitution and the rights of our citizens. And it bothered me so much to have them disparaging all of those people, our fellow Americans, through this whole process. And then to do it in the courtroom, just a vile, reprehensible. That was the thing that made me mad after the first 2 days, because they just keep standing up there and lying, right? Amy Erickson got up, the lead counsel for Lathrop GPM, which was the plaintiff's counsel, behind them, the real legal hand behind them was Free Speech for People and Courtney Hostetler, who was there. But and then behind her is somebody funding them. And I think you have to ask yourself why Mark Elias was paying such close attention to this and was so quick to, you know, pull the trigger there.
And say it was dismissed. And he's still saying our case was dismissed. I will at him every single day until he changes his headline.
I saw you checked somebody on
mm-hmm. on yeah. Well, I, yeah. So Colorado Newsline published immediately Judge Toss's case. And I said, Chase, come on, buddy. That's not what happened. It was decided. The case is actually closed. Judge Charlotte Sweeney's words were, this case is closed. And so right. Newsline ended up changing their headline. Mark Elias has not changed his headline yet.
He also misrepresented. So the judge said there was not sufficient evidence to proceed any further in the case because the plaintiffs had rested. What she said about their evidence was it never even came close to voter intimidation or a conspiracy to intimidate voters. But so Amy Erickson even got up there and, you know, when she was supposed to be representing the potential testimony of the witnesses who they weren't going to call, she just kept lying. And that was the thing that bothered me so much about it, is they just kept lying. And I thought there has to be a cost for that. There has to be an accounting for that, you know, because they have, like Karen said, done this to other people.
Yep.
And that was, you know, I have to give credit, not just to the counsel, you know, Ash, who wouldn't even consider a settlement, but to Holly, who I think proposed a settlement to them that was so painful that it, you know, they kind of had no choice but to reject her settlement because they thought they were going to just have their way in the court. But
didn't go the way they thought.
No, right. What is it? The line from The Wire, like you want it to be one way, but it's the other way. I think, you know, I think that there's some vindication for all the volunteers who were just doing their duty. And Dion Farganis, who was one of their attorneys in deposition, really hated me saying it was duty, but it was duty for everybody, and they did their duty, and then they got smeared for it. And so I'm just grateful. I'm grateful for the outcome.
Me too. So much. All right. Thank you both so much for joining us today. We'll have you back. And as additional developments come up in this, we'll talk about it here. Have a great week, guys.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Well, we are out of time, but before we get out of here, we're going to talk about epicminerals.net.
All right. This is my favorite brand. Shout out to Epic Minerals. And you know, I got to also say that I'm kind of using a lot of my
You're using it up.
Yeah, but hey.
EpicMinerals.net brings you a number of incredible products that you've got to check out. Head on over to EpicMinerals.net. We've got the Zeolite Extra Spray. I've got mine right here. I'm actually almost out of it. We take 20 sprays a day, and it binds to heavy metals and flushes them away. The Epic Rainfall, it just makes dead skin fall right off and leaves just incredible moisture behind. Creamy body butter, especially if you live in a dry climate like I do here in Colorado, the creamy body butter is a lifesaver. In fact, my co-host on Why We Vote, CanCon, he was out here in Colorado and had his creamy body butter with him, and he said, I could never use this in Florida, it's so humid, I would never need this, but out here it's like, you know, like a dry, you feel like a dried out sponge if you don't have enough moisture. And so he was very grateful. We've got the artisan soaps. There's scalp treatments and all sorts of things. So head over to epicminerals.net. Use promo code ASH, A-S-H-E, and you will support Darren and I on this show.
So you don't be ashy.
That's right. That's right. So that is the show that we have for you guys today. We will be back here next Sunday at 2 p.m. and Mountain Time. And we'll have probably an insane amount of news to cover, because that's how the news cycle goes.
It's going to be one hell of a week.
It is going to be one hell of a week. We'll see you guys then. Everybody have an absolutely phenomenal week. Peace.